pad is...
Actually, let me try pulling this mic off. So that we can record whatever we talk about. Let's see if that does any better or not. It may not, because the settings are set for mic, and so I'm not quite sure, external mics, I'm not quite sure what will happen. We'll see. So, any questions about that? Maybe that was a heavy way to end that, that story, but...
Some of the images in Tibetan Buddhism are very ferocious.
Yes. So what's the question about that, though?
Well,
I know what you're saying, but what is the question that's buried in there?
Well, I'm not really sure.
Okay.
But I'm not really sure because power is not necessarily anger, but power against injustice.
Okay, here's, when I was a kid living in Los Angeles, we drove up to Yellowstone Park once, and we went into a gift shop, and I don't know if you remember this, in the old gift shops, they used to have little plaques that would be like sliced out of a tree limb, and they'd have something like a little saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. The one that stuck in my mind was, yea, though I walk through the valley of death, I shall fear no evil, for I'm the meanest son of a bitch in the valley. So, who are these fierce Buddhas? Well, what are they being fierce about? They're being fierce about ignorance. They're being fierce about greed. I once asked Zatshoji Rinpoche, who's visiting here, I once asked Zatshoji Rinpoche about one particular bodhisattva who's particularly fierce and is described as being practicing with this bodhisattva is described as following the path of anger. Path of anger? What the heck is this? And he said, it's not the kind of anger that you're thinking of. When we're angry, there's a lot of ego. He said, this anger is anger with no ego. And I'm thinking to myself when I hear that, I don't have a clue what that would be.
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's what that would be. That fierceness of this Buddha, that's what that would be. And it's really easy to look at that and think that it's something else entirely. I mean, the missionaries who first went to Tibet looked at what they saw in the temples and they said, mm-hmm. Boy, these people are not just heathens, they're demon worshippers. Mm-hmm. You know, they were completely freaked out at what they saw. The Tibetans didn't really care very much about what the missionaries thought about anything and didn't get it very well explained to very many of them. Although interestingly, the Jesuit and the Capuchin missionaries got it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was the Protestant missionaries that didn't get it. And I think one of the reasons for that is that there's a way in which the Catholic tradition maintained an understanding of the power of images that the Protestant tradition didn't have, and that they could understand it at some deeper level what might have been happening. If you go to Paris, and you go to Notre Dame Cathedral, you look at all those gargoyles all over the mm-hmm. all over the cathedral, and you know, you don't say, oh my goodness, the people who built this cathedral were demon worshippers. You look at that and say, okay, these are guardians in some way. They represent something that I don't fully understand. But you don't draw the same conclusion. I don't mean you particularly. But people wouldn't draw the same conclusion as they would if they go to another country where there's another culture and they don't really understand. But as I said, it didn't seem to be such a big deal with the Capuchins. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And the Jesuits. I mean, you know, they thought that the Tibetans had it all wrong, of course, because of Buddhists and whatnot. But they didn't have the same take on it.
Also, you know, when we're doing the Buddha meditation with Shakyamuni Buddha, which is or Tara, which is a very beautiful and peaceful form, mm-hmm. and they're in front of us. And I say that this is a reflection mm-hmm. of us, that's pretty easy to interact with. Mm-hmm. To think, I'm beautiful, I'm compassionate, you know, I'm wise, and so on and so forth. And, you know, one of the things that I remember Tara Tulku talking about as well was the, if you're dealing with a really fierce aspect of the Buddha, like on the path of anger, like Yamataka, and can you imagine that as a mirror? Mm-hmm. You know, when you look in the mirror, when you're really angry, you know, if you're really angry, your face is red, your eyes are bulging, there's almost literally steam coming out of your ears, you know. So in a way, that is also like a reflection back to us of what our anger is and what it looks like. And it's a way of facing it, because most of us don't really, that's just something that's hard to deal with, you know, our past anger, our rage at the things that have happened to us, the injustices, you know, all that kind of stuff is all sitting down there. And when you're working with an image like Yamataka, it's a very kind of deep, subconscious image that you're working with, and the stuff that's really buried deep. So, and working with that particular image helps slowly bring that anger, rage, all those different things up to the and ignorance up to the surface, and helps you start dealing with it and transforming with it if you have the tools. And that's what the tantric practice is about: continually make the offerings, do the circle of energy, do the ritual, do the prayer, is to start, and the visualizations and all the things, the intricate parts of it, is to take that, when that comes up, that image and that reflection comes up to us, that we, so we can deal it with it, and that we can transform what's inside of us into something positive. So I don't know if that helps, but that's that.
Yeah, and sometimes it's the image of something that's happened to you. It's not just the image of your own anger. I mean, my father used to beat me, and he would be enraged, and I feared for my life as a child. So I remember what being small and what an enraged, large, powerful man looked like. It wasn't pleasant. Mm-hmm. Wasn't pleasant at all. These are tools. That's okay. These are tools for getting at these old emotions and old emotional experiences, mm-hmm. on both sides, whether they're to you or something that comes from the outside. But I just wanted to turn the other side to it, because in some ways, I don't know whether it's harder to face the residue of somebody else's negative energies or your own. Mm-hmm. They're kind of the same, but they're kind of different. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. And then there's a book that's called The Wheel of Sharp Weapons, that goes through all these different passages, and it's talking about Yamataka. And basically the premise of it is that you're your own worst enemy, in a way, and that you need all these tools, fierce tools and so on and so forth, to basically, you know, wipe out these negative, or transform is better way to say it. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the transform is better, because the energy,
you want the energy.
Yeah, I mean, there is something I haven't mentioned here for a while, but there is the Tibetans have a way of describing the relationship of the mind and your inner energies, probably like what Freud would call libido or something like that, or life force, whatever you want to call it. Qi in Chinese would be an example, Shakti in the Hindu traditions. That the relationship of idea or concept or image and energy, it's like that of a horse and a rider, but they're never separate from each other. So the concept rides on energy, and energy is blind; it needs to be directed by the concept. And so they have this mutual relationship, which is either out of control and running wild, or is fluid and, you know, doing something positive and productive. And the way you mobilize the energy is through the concept or the image. And sometimes the way you control the concept is directly through the energy. So when we do the 9-round breathing, mm-hmm. and you experience kind of a settling, your energy sort of settles, your mind settles with it. Because when you settle your physical energy through control of the breath, you also settle the mental energy. So when you visualize things, you're actually also visualizing your own inner energies in certain kind of ways. It sounds pretty abstract, but when you develop some facility with it, you see that it's true. You see that it really happens and that you can do things with it. I mean, we all know that if we're angry, what's the old adage, stop and take three breaths? I mean, that's folk wisdom, you know, because some of these things are so absolutely obvious to us. What were you going to say? You had a question?
Was it an example of anger that does not, it's not driven by ego, would be when you see a child being abused, bullied. I feel rage when I see something like that.
But is the rage self-righteous rage, or is the rage compassionate?
It's
rage?
For the child. It's compassion. I know the difference because sometimes it keys into something,
yeah.
And you have to recognize there's more to what you're experiencing than just an injustice. But sometimes it is very pure and direct. Mm-hmm.
You'd say which child?
Yeah.
Pardon?
You could say which child.
What do you mean, which child? Am I thinking of myself?
Your rage.
Well, I can use this as an example. I've never bullied or abused, so when I feel that, it doesn't connect with a child within, if that's what you're suggesting.
My point is, people that bully other people are usually damaged.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
And
so which child? And
yeah.
You need to love them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, David?
I'm not going to say anything.
I hear
you
a
guys,
thought.
No, I know you guys are carrying this conversation on. You don't need my intervention in it.
May I say something?
Of course.
Something that I reflected upon from what you were saying about, one thing just recently about your breath. Some people believe in pranayama, if you can control your breath, you can control your emotions.
Right.
And in our culture, we do nothing without our breath, even though breath is the thing that we can do without least.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the other thing is that I've done some work with Native American culture, Sundance, and other kinds of things, and they're very connected with their ancestors. You talk about the grandfathers, the stones, and even these days, when they eat together, they leave a spirit offering.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah.
And so there are cultures, I think, that are still connected with their, I don't know how I would say, their roots, that are still doing that kind of thing. I think when we move up here, and then we sort of lose that kind of grounding and all kinds of, all we have to do is look around. We don't have appreciation or the love exchange of life around us,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Life within us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I just thought about those things.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things that I observe, and actually following on what you said, one of the things that I observed that I actually tend to be really concerned about is the way in which, if I spend a lot of time on the internet, like I'm messing with Twitter right now, it's all happening,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and like my energy gets very jangly,
mm-hmm.
and very speedy,
mm-hmm.
and it's actually, I'm in the midst of a battle right now,
mm-hmm.
where I find myself being drawn first thing in the morning to deal with issues that I know are issues that have to be resolved online in one way or another. And then I find it really hard to sit and meditate when
mm-hmm.
I do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if I just sort of wake up and I watch the sun come up and I have a cup of coffee and I start meditating as I'm sitting in the chair watching the sun, and then I sit down to do my daily practice, it's one kind of practice. But if I know I have some emails waiting for me, or if there's some problem in the middle of the night, it's like, oh, I want to tweak this website in this way or do this thing. And then one thing leads to another. There's always this cascading. Something's being updated. Something didn't work. Something else is broken. Somebody wants something. Half an hour goes by, and I'm like this because I've had that cup of coffee. Right? And it's like, oh. You know, and it's like I really feel for me anyway, you know, I have to deal with this environment as if it's an addiction that has all the qualities of some some drug, mm-hmm. which on the one hand can be positive, and on the other hand can be really dangerous. And, you know, it's kind of like, how do you figure out kind of the protocol for this? Mm-hmm. What I teach at the university, and one of the things I'm always joking with the students about is the students who walk out of class immediately pull out their smartphones and start texting each other and whatnot as they walk down the stairs. But I've never seen one fall, so they can do it. But I just look at that and I think, I cannot believe this, you know? But there it is. And it's like, your life is going by. I mean, look at the weather. So I do worry about the impact of this, but I'm in there myself. Maybe that's one of the reasons I'm worried. I'm doing the same thing myself. And it does jangle your breath up.
Yeah.
And you become very unconscious, and I think that that's what I wanted to bring back to my segue to what you were saying. Mm-hmm. You got a follow on with that, too?
Yeah, I just wanted to add from what you just said that I don't have a TV or anything like that, but I do have a computer. And I don't watch ads, but when you look at the ads, they're becoming quicker and quicker. The children's games are becoming quicker than we can possibly move. Because, and that's why there's more and more violence. Mind always wants to up the ante. Uh-huh. And I think when we look into our communities, it's, you know, we see people dying in all different kinds of ways, and now we have drone attacks, and you're talking about the kids here, doing that, the adults are sitting behind walls with drones. So if we just look at the adults, we'll see how that's reflected in our children.
Yeah. Yeah, who was it? Somebody was telling me that they were in some city, someplace. I don't know what it was. They saw this couple with a stroller. Was it you?
Seattle at Christmas time.
And apparently they had rigged something like an iPad in front of the stroller. So this little, whatever, small child in the stroller had his attention or her attention totally on this little iPad in front of them as they were walking through town. I'm thinking.
And there were lots of people on the streets and Santa Clauses and window dressings and all this fun stuff going on. And they're pushing along, talking to their friends, and this little kid is just plastered against this little screen.
I find that so scary.
Yeah.
Scary. Cars, too.
Yeah.
That was a challenge. We bought a car, and every car lot that I went in, every dealership I went into, I said, look, my business is technology. If you try to sell me a car that has a computer monitor on the dashboard, I'm turning around and walking out right now. It's the end of this conversation. You find me a car that does not have a computer monitor on the dashboard. I do not have a computer monitor on the dashboard. They found me a car.
That's a surprise.
Yeah. But it took some effort, and they all looked at me like,
you don't want that?
No, what are you talking about?
One for every passenger in your car?
Yeah, right. That too. TV screens.
Are there more questions or observations, or shall we have some tea and snacks? There are lots of nice things in the kitchen. Mm. That's all nice. Mm. And then we'll come back. And are we going to do Shakyamuni tonight?
No, we're going to do Guitar again.
Everyone we're going to do Shakyamuni.
No, yeah, I heard that.
Usually we do, and I just decided we're kind of amping the energy up on the Green Tara, and I think I want to keep it moving in that direction, if that's okay with everybody. Also, I don't have to work so hard then.
So remember, in the Green Tara,
I don't have to lead the meditation. The you all have to participate.
Argyam, Padyam, Gande, Pupe, Dupe, Alke.
Yeah.
New Day is the way it's been. The thing to be clear here is Kay and I were taught to pronounce it in the Sanskrit way, but Dzogchen has written it out in the Tibetan style.
Yeah.
So
we'll follow that, the way
that.
It is in the book.
Yeah.
And the only thing, if you want to do small practice, I probably talked to all of you about this before, but one of the things you can do, it's the most basic thing of all, is to take a bowl, some kind of special bowl, maybe the bowl you got at the soup supper, whatever. Take a bowl and fill it up with water every morning, or light a little piece of incense, and just if you don't want to say anything or do any prayers, may all beings be happy and free from suffering, whatever. What, you know, it takes 2 minutes, and it's a way to do a little offering, you know. And lots of times I'll do that, and then when I do my practice, I'll take it outside the bowl of water outside after I've done the practice alongside it, the energy, and take it out and throw it out. There's a Zen tradition that says the water with which we fill this bowl tastes like ambrosia. We offer it to the various spirits to satisfy them. Om Maha Kusalaya Swaha. So go outside and throw the water and just imagine it turning to millions of rainbow drops and all the formless being, you know, coming in and to participate in it. There, you know, David's got his little thing that he built out in the garden where he can go make a little incense offering. Even in the middle of winter, sometimes he goes out there and does it. It's a really nice way to interact with what's outside. This time of year, it's kind of hard because it's cold. So those are really simple things that make a huge difference. Offering a stick of incense every day can make a huge difference. It's like a mindfulness practice that interconnects you with everything. Just doing that. So anyway, you can make up your own. But those are just the most basic one that the Buddha and his followers did was to take a bowl. They all owned a bowl. And everywhere they went, they could always find water. These days we can probably still find water. Mm-hmm. Maybe in the future we won't be able to. But to put water in the bowl and to make an offering, there's always water. So that's the most basic one. Doesn't cost anything. Well, yeah, that's maybe not true anymore either. But anyway, it's still there. So anyway, I would encourage all of you to, you know, maybe this week, coming couple of weeks, to try and find one thing you can do every day to make an offering and to connect in that way. And you all brought food offerings, so we should go in and enjoy this.
We could also make what is